we will continue with our work. If there was a small group, I'd ask people for feedback on the looking for your circle, person in your circle one. But I think if we start, we'll probably spend around 10 hours discussing it. So we're going to skip the feedback for today. I have a little bit of like a conflict of interest here because it's an interesting thing. Our topic is positivity, so I really want to get to the positive. But you have to remove the negative before you get to the positive. So we're spending a lot of time talking about people's faults and negative things, but really our purpose here is positivity. So today I'm going to actually split what I'm saying between removing of the negative and then infusing the positivity. So that's what we're going to be working with. Okay, I just want to say that every one of these topics can be expanded on, but we're kind of just trying to do a crash, you know, get it all in the two sessions that we have. Okay, so we spoke about sablanot, and we spoke about the idea of not reprocessing the thing that I feel negative about again and again. We did not speak about that negative thing itself. What is it? And chances are that when somebody is in your circle one, but you're not feeling so good about them, there's something about them that bothers you. This is true about circle three people too. When you meet somebody and you don't have that naturally warm, good feeling about them, there's usually something that is not allowing my positivity to flow. And just to remind you, we said last week that the way I am with my circle two people, the people who press my feel-good buttons, that's my capacity in this mida. I'm capable of being very loving, very forthcoming, with a free flow of love, but something is not allowing me to do this. Now, we as women are very critical. We're very self-critical, we're critical of others, and I always like to say that, like, there's such a funny, almost like a contradiction, because we're very friendly outwardly, so we'll pass somebody by and we'll say, "Hi, how are you doing? You know, you look great, or your kids are so cute." And then we walk by, and then the running commentary is going in our head, like, "That kid looks like he's really acting up, and that's the way she dresses them, and blah." So, like, inside me, I have this, like, critical voice, but I try to be, like, all, like, nice and positive. We'd like to get to a place where our positivity is inside and not just outside. And sometimes people even sense the fakeness, and even if they don't, we want to be truly positive. So really, as a prerequisite to this mida, we spoke about sablanot, but really also being dan l'kaf zchut is going to be one of our prerequisites for this. There's so much to say on this topic that if I started, I don't think I could stop. So I took a lot of my material and I tried to condense it to the main point. And basically my theory is as follows. When there's somebody who's not getting free-flowing love from you, there's some negative thing about them that's bothering you. Sometimes we can't put our finger on it. She's just not my type. Or I just don't like her. But sometimes there's a certain word or a certain something that comes to mind that is really blocking me from being very loving towards you. And I'd like to start with this today. Because a lot of times, if we want to be positive and we want to get to that loving place, I have to do a double exercise. One of them is sor meira. I have to get rid of that bad word or that critical thing that I think about you. And then we have to get to the aseh tov. I have to think positively about you. So we're going to spend a little bit of time now talking about removing the negative. And that's the concept of being dan l'kaf zchut. There's a lot to say about this midah, but I'm just going to cut straight to the chase and not give you all the makoros in the Gemara, two makoros in the Gemara, makor in the Mishnah of Avos. There's a lot to say about this. But let's get straight to it. Rav Tzvi Meir Zilberberg, famous tzaddik in Yerushalayim, maybe people have heard of him. He has a sefer called Dion L'Kaf Zchut, a book full of vadim that he gave on this topic. I like to recommend this book often to my students. Why? Because a lot of us, when we think about being tolerant of other people, we kind of think that it comes with, yeah, well, if you don't have high standards, then it doesn't bother you how she dresses or how she acts or how she talks or whatever it is. We kind of think that it comes with the territory, that the more I have high standards, the more I can't help the fact that the side product of my high standards is that I can't help but noticing that you're not so good in this area. And I always say that every time you develop a new area that you care about, unfortunately, you start noticing the people who are not as good at it. And even something as simple as signing up to a nutrition class, and getting a lot out of it, but then all of a sudden you have a new thing. Every time you're in the park, you can't stop noticing that people are feeding their kids food coloring and sugar all day. So now, my nutrition class means I have a new thing to be critical of everybody about. They have Coca-Cola on their Shabbat table. What's wrong with them? Right? So this is what happens. The more you care about something, the more what comes with that territory is being critical of others who don't have it or are not as good as you in that area. And this is particularly tricky when it comes to religious sensitivities. Because I can work on myself very, very hard in a certain meat, in a certain area, but I don't want to suffer the side effects, which is then to notice everybody else who's not on that same standard. And this is really, really difficult. And the reason why I recommend Rav Tzvi Meyer Sefer is because Rav Tzvi Meyer is a big tzaddik with incredibly high personal standards in religiosity, and yet he's advocating loving freely all the people who do not have the standards that you have. So it's easy to say that if you come from a very tolerant, liberal, it all goes, it's all okay, then it's easier to be tolerant. But the trick here is that this is somebody whose standard is way up, but is completely capable of loving people of different standards. So I have to say the first thing he says here, and he says this in bold letters a few times in the Kuntra. He says, you're noticing somebody else's fault is never, never, he says, coming from a higher place than you, even when the thing that you're noticing is a religious sensitivity. So you might say, but I can't help it. It bothers me that people dress this way, act this way, talk this way, whatever it is. I'm the Shmirat HaLashon expert. I can't handle. He says, you're right, that it's very nice that you're very sensitive, but just be aware that you're noticing and you're being critical of others is not coming from the high place in you. It's coming from the low place in you. Even if the topic is a good one, the fact that you're noticing so much is not so good. And he says it in a sweeping way, it's never coming from a good place. Meaning, we're complex people. So mitzad achad, I have this beautiful sensitivity towards a certain mitzvah, a certain topic. And mitzad sheni, I have this little part of me that needs to be critical. And it's all coming about together around that topic. So the Gemara in Kiddushin Ayin says two things about noticing people's faults. The Gemara says, kol ha-posel, the mumo posel, which literally translates to mean anybody who negates or finds a flaw in another person, it's his own flaw that he's finding. And then the Gemara goes on to say, kol ha-posel pasul. Anybody who negates others, he himself has a problem. Now, kol ha-posel b'mumo posel is difficult, because the assumption being that there's something called like a projected thing, that really, I'm a little selfish. So I don't like to admit to that about myself, but it takes one to know one. So I can pick up selfish people. I have a radar for them. That's what kol ha-posel b'mumo posel means. That I'm projecting my own issues onto others because I'm familiar with it, but I'm not comfortable with it in me. But I could see it in you and pick it up in a second. And that's why the first thing that a person asks himself when he's critical about somebody else is, could it be that this person is a little too reminiscent of somebody who I know and love, meaning me? And when it's a level one person who you're critical of, which means somebody in your inner circle, then you really have to ask yourself, maybe I don't like in them what I don't like in myself. And this is not always the case, but sometimes it's the case. Because our loved ones tend to take on resemblances to us. And I'm very frustrated to see that meet on you. I'm very put off by it to see it in you. I kind of wish you didn't have it. You're reminding me. Whatever that is. So that's kol ha-posel b'mumo posel. Sometimes it seems to be exactly the opposite. Meaning, because I am organized, I cannot handle disorganized people. So here I'm not being posel because I just have this in me. It's actually the opposite. I cannot understand how you could possibly speak Lashon Hara because I never speak Lashon Hara. Or how could you be so insensitive, so tactless? I'm very tactful, actually. In fact, that's why it's on my radar screen. And here, Rav Tzvi Meyer goes into a whole very interesting understanding. Kol ha-posel pasul means that even if I am very developed in a certain area, it shouldn't mean that I have to be, therefore have an excuse to look down on everybody else. And I have to ask myself, why am I so aware of where you're missing? Even if I'm good at it, there's something off about my need to have this running commentary about you. And Kol HaPosel Pasul, Tzvi Meyer, has a beautiful, this is one of my favorite things. I look through all my Dalin Kosel's material to pick out the main points that I wanted to share with you today. And this idea that Tzvi Meyer says is beautiful. He says, when you notice a weakness in somebody else, and it's not your weakness, first of all, when it is your weakness, you say, thank you. Meaning, I have to see this in you in order to remind me that I have to improve myself. So the energy goes back towards my self-improvement, and not only am I not negative and critical of you, I'm actually appreciative that I'm improving because of you. The Baal Shem Tov, there's a famous Gemara that the Baal Shem Tov commented on. The Gemara talks about this Michud Parshia between Nazir and Sota. And the Gemara says, Kol ha-ro'es Sota b'kilkula yazir asmo v'nayayin. Anybody who sees the immoral lady in her immoral behavior will become a Nazir. Meaning he himself will stay away from wine. What's the connection between the two Parshia? That's the Gemara is saying that that's where the Torah puts the Nazir and Sota next to each other. Baal Shem Tov said something beautiful about this. He says, you are seeing something that is very despicable to you, but it is a waste of your spiritual energy to focus on it in the other person. You know what I call it? I call it cheap spirituality. You get to feel like a tzaddik for nothing. All I do is I say, ah, what's the world come to today? Ah, I walk away, I feel amazing, and I didn't do anything. All I did was be critical of you. So when the Gemara tells you, it means that there's something that's almost like a boomerang effect. I don't want to just walk away and feel good for no reason. It's a cause for my self-evaluation. So we're going to take it away from you and what you're doing, and we're going to bring it back to me. And the way the Baal Shem Tov explains it is that a person who sees, okay, so it's in today's, you know, terminology would be you read about some kind of scandal and it's really immoral and despicable to you. And instead of just like, ah, and walking away, what's the world coming to today? And feeling very self-righteous, you ask yourself, would I ever stoop to that behavior? The answer is probably not. But then you ask yourself further, is there any aspect of this where I need to improve? In the case of the Nazir said, you know, I'm a pretty upstanding moral person, but if I would be drunk, I don't know if I could trust myself. So the Nazir's conclusion was, I'm not going to drink wine. The Baal Shem Tov says that you don't have to come to a self-critical evaluation of every time you see something bad in somebody else saying, what would it take for me to get there? Sometimes you could say, you know what, Baruch Hashem, I've worked on myself in this year, this is not my problem. But what you did is you just harnessed the energy of negativity, and you turned it into something positive. Self-awareness. The self-awareness might be, Baruch Hashem, this is not my problem. But the idea is that I didn't leave it on you. I moved it into a positive place of self-awareness. I always bring this example that one time I was driving through Shar Yafo, and I don't know if anybody, you know, has this picture in their head of Shar Yafo of like a lot of unemployed Arabs sitting on like benches, like, you know, sitting on and kind of like fighting it with each other and just kind of hanging around there all day. So one of my children looks out the window and says, ah, you know, ha'am adom el chamor or something like that, whatever it was. I said to them, could you ever see yourself sitting on a gate, you know, throwing chains at somebody else or yelling at somebody else? They said, nah, I would never do that. I said, but do you fight, like, privately in your room with your brother? Yeah, maybe, sometimes. I'm like, okay, so now you just learned something. You wouldn't sit in Shar Yafo and yell at somebody, but in your own room, you know, sometimes it could happen. And it was a light moment. It wasn't, oy vey, I'm terrible. But it was a moment of, yeah, you know, some people do things publicly that other people do privately, so maybe I should realize when I'm in private that I should also, you know, I could look like that, but in private. Sometimes the answer would be, no, this is not my problem, Baruch Hashem, I'm doing well. But the idea is that it's reflected in a positive, growth-oriented way. Okay, that's the first point. So therefore, when I see a chisaron in somebody else, I say thank you for the fact that you gave me a point of self-evaluation. I'm not going to think at you. And now I'm going to like think about the world, think about myself, think about any kind of self-awareness. But Tzvi Meyer says something different and very, very beautiful. He says, when you see a flaw in somebody, and let's think about the kind of person who sees a flaw that is not their problem, meaning I'm Dafka organized and that's why the lazy people bother me, right? And that's why, by the way, this Circle One person is not my favorite person, because there's something that I'm very careful about that they seem to not be good at. And that's what's bothering me. And I think it's very common, because we have this projective thing of I see my chitzronos in you and I don't like it. But more commonly, I think, is when you have a strong point, it bothers you when other people are weak in that area. So I think for some of us, for example, raising our children in a different culture, if you believe in a certain kind of level of communication, and your child is picking up a different culture type of communication, you might be very critical of that, because you're thinking to yourself, I didn't talk that way when I was that age, or why are they using those words? Meaning you're taking your own standard and you're saying, ah, I don't like this in you. So Rav Tzvi Meir says something amazing. He says that when you see a flaw in somebody else, you don't want to focus on it. In fact, you're almost like sorry that you caught this person exposed. And you look away. But he brings an example, which I must tell you that I read this years ago. I don't remember his example, but I wrote down in my notebook a woman's example. So, let's say you're somewhere, and there's some lady walking very confidently down the street, except that her slip is falling down, or her zipper is open, or something like that. Most of us, if you're not the type to go over and point it out to her, whether you will or not, but most people will kind of like look away. Because you just caught this person exposed. They don't even realize that they're exposed, and you're embarrassed for them. You're sorry that you saw that. You know, in fact, I was just recently at a wedding where, you know, somebody was picking up the collar's dress, and she was a little bit exposed, and I saw most people just go like this. It's not comfortable to notice this. Like, because I want to be mechabed you, I don't want to catch you in a vulnerable position. And this is what most of us do. When somebody is in a situation which is unfortunate, and you experience that, you kind of like look away. The next thing that you do is you often check your own slip. Or your own, you know, you go like this, you know, am I all buttoned up properly? Meaning, what is that? I could be caught in an exposed position too. This is not. I'm not different than you. But Rav Tzvi Meir says that's the way you relate to people's chesronos. If you catch somebody who's exhibiting a flaw, a personality flaw, they may not even realize that they're exhibiting it. It's like that woman is walking confidently and she doesn't even realize that her slip is halfway down. This person doesn't realize that they're coming off a certain way. In fact, they may not even be knowledgeable enough to know that it's a problem. But the point is, you just caught somebody exposed, and your response is supposed to be to look away. Meaning, I'm sorry that I caught that in you. I'm not going to look at it again and again. You know, if you see somebody looking again and again at that woman with the slip falling down, or maybe even going like this to his friend and pointing, it's probably a child under the age of 5. Those are the people who say, oh, look, and they all look, and they look. Most of us, as we mature as adults, we look away. It's not so amusing to find somebody exposed, and it hits into the vulnerable place of all of us who would not want to be that person, which is why you kind of afterwards check yourself. So therefore, the same is true in people's negative, personality traits. If I catch you exposed because there's a standard that you're exhibiting that's lower than my standard or different than my standard or whatever, and by the way, this isn't always objective. Sometimes it's because I'm very sensitive about this, so to me you're exposed. To you, according to your standards, you don't even feel like you're doing anything wrong. But at least from my perspective, I caught you doing something. But then the response is supposed to be, look away and check yourself. Meaning, this is not fun. Not fun to catch somebody in a lower standard. It's something that I wish I didn't see, and the vulnerability in me says, you know, you could catch me in plenty of unpleasant situations as well. I'm not perfect. But Tzvi Meir says that's what Dalma Kavsos means. This is not a fun thing to notice people's faults. And if you're over the age of 5, you definitely don't want to focus on it and rehash it in your mind. And yet we all realize that about the lady whose slip is calling coming down. But when it comes to talking about the fact that some people dress like this, or some people speak Lashon Hara, or some people whatever, whatever, we do tend to do this. We focus on it, and we talk about it, and we point it out, and we think about it, and we tell it over to our husbands later. To a certain extent, we are finding pleasure in somebody's chisara. Not what we want to do. We want to modestly look away and say, I'm sorry I saw that. I'm not perfect either. The next stage after that is that you say, but you know what? Why can't she get her act together? You know, I used to dress like that, or I used to act like that. I worked really hard on myself. And that's why it bothers me. So the answer that Rav Meir gives to that is a beautiful, beautiful idea. He says, when you're saying about other people, why can't they be on a higher level? You're attributing a lot of your own success to yourself. You're saying, I got it together. I'm careful not to say that or wear that or whatever it is. What's wrong with her? He said that in any area of success, whether it's Avodas Hashem or something in the technical world, he says, you will never know the balance between your efforts and Siyata Dishmaya. You are saying, I used to be that bad and I changed, and that's why it bothers me to see you. So you're basically saying, me, 98% my effort. If she'd be a little better and get her act together, she'd be like me. He said, that's very nice. But maybe it was 98% Siyata Dishmaya. And your effort that you think is the major part here is only a very small percentage. You'll never know. And clearly, if you're doing well in a certain area, you have had Siyata Dishmaya. Even the fact that you were exposed, that you were inspired, that you were motivated, that you were committed, that you worked on it, that you struggle with it. It's all Hashem kind of, two people go to the same shir. One person comes out motivated to change something, the other person isn't. A lot of that is Siyata Dishmaya. Hashem motivated one person, and the other person was left neutral. So therefore, when you see somebody who's not developed in the same area as you, you say to yourself, I got the gift of Siyata Dishmaya. I won the lottery. I'm going to be angry at somebody who didn't win the lottery. And Rav Tzvi Meir says that the approach is supposed to be lehitpalel ulehitpael. Lehitpalel, not that they should have Siyata Dishmaya. Why are you so angry at them? Why are you so critical of them? Say, Baruch Hashem, I'm lucky. And he said, you can even, when you check your own slip, you can take a minute to think, what would I look like if I didn't have Siyata Dishmaya? Maybe I'd be look worse than them. I have my vulnerabilities. This is not a contest where I'm winning. And there are other areas where I definitely would not be one caught exposed. I don't want you to catch me in my kitchen an hour before Shabbat. Not a pleasant place to be seen. We all have our places where we don't want to be caught exposed. And therefore we respect the fact that when I do catch somebody else exposed, I modestly look away. And that's the attitude towards criticism. I think that's when we live in a community with so many different types of people and different standards, this is a big nisayon, and this is so necessary. Because nobody's perfect, and there's something we shouldn't be getting that under 5-year-old pleasure of focusing again and again on what other people are doing wrong. So this is the first key to positivity. Lehitpalel ulehitpael. What does it mean, lehitpael? And we're going to get to this in a few minutes. Lehitpael is the Ayin Tova. I need to be moved by you in a positive way. I need to see what's good about you. I can daven for you to have Siyata Dishmaya, and I could be very impressed about something about you which is special, where maybe even you could teach me a thing or two. And people are multidimensional. You know, the Maharal talks about this, that Chazal say, Shivim Panim LaTorah. How could Torah have 70 sides to it? So the mashal that the Maharal gives is that if you have a square, I'll bring a mashal today of like the Rubik's Cubes, which are back in style after many years. So if you ask somebody to describe the Rubik's Cube, somebody says, well, it's a lot of yellow squares. And somebody else says, no, it's a lot of orange squares. And somebody else is saying, no, it's green and blue. They're each looking at one dimension of the cube, and they're reporting to you the truth about what it is that they're seeing. So everybody's looking at a different dimension, they're seeing something different. The person who you have in your level one, who you can't help but notice what's not good about them, you're looking at one dimension of this multidimensional person. And if you flip the cube to the other side, there's definitely a good word or two that you could use about them. And it's your choice to do that. So maybe I'll enter Ayin Tova here for a second. I want to go back to Dalnikov's post in a minute. This is an exercise that I'm actually going to go back to when it comes to the homework for today. I apologize to anybody here who studied NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, because I never studied it, but I read a little bit about it, and I'm sure I'm not doing service to it by what I'm saying right now. You can choose to change your associations with a person, with a place, with an event, by programming your brain to associate it with different things. In fact, some of this is linguistic, it's the words you use. Some of it is associative. I was once reading somewhere that if you have somebody who you don't like so much, and you smell your favorite perfume as you think about them, if you did this continuously, you can get to a pleasant association with them, because you're making your brain fire a positive response to your association with them. I think a lot of us have negative associations. There's a certain smell that brings up a negative. I always say to my husband, there's certain music that when I was expecting my first son and I was very nauseous, there was a certain Zvekos tape that we used to listen to. And every time that goes on now, 24 years later, I get nauseous when I hear that song. I also have nice associations. When I smell a certain kind of freshly mowed grass, I think of Camp Sternberg, where I loved spending my summers when I was younger. We all have associations. Part of the way we work on positivity is to reassociate the person who we're having a hard time with something positive. Now, just like the cube that has a few different dimensions, when you're aware of what it is that you're having a difficulty, you have a certain association with this person. Meaning, you might be thinking aggressive. I just can't deal with this person. They're very aggressive. Now, flip over a different side of the cube, efficient. Did you ever notice that sometimes there are a lot of aggressive people who are pretty efficient? They get the job done through their aggressiveness. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that every person who's aggressive is efficient. What I'm trying to say is that when you flip around the cube, you see a different adjective that could be used about this person that's a positive one. And the NLP exercise here is going to be that it's going to work with either a circle one person or a circle three people to like them better. I need to associate them with a certain positive word. Now, I'm practicing this myself, and I haven't done it long enough to really tell you about results, so you can all try yourself. You need to practice this. Every time you think about that person, you say, efficient, efficient. You look at them, you start a conversation with them, this is a very efficient person. Because chances are, you're saying aggressive, aggressive, aggressive. You might be saying it subconsciously. You might not even be in touch with exactly what it is that bothers you about them. But whatever it is, that association fires together. You see the person, you think aggressive. You need to reprogram the way your brain associates with them. So the first thing you want to do is to pick a positive word, because everybody has positive things about them. And you want to start associating that person with a positive word. You practice this. You think about them. When you talk to them, you think about the positive word. And this is part of taking that level one person and making them feel level two. Because we do this naturally for level two people. The people who press your feel-good buttons, when you think about them, you have nice things that you think about. Do they not have chasronos? They have plenty of chasronos. You just have the cube on a different side for them. And you're focusing on what's good. So if you want to turn a level one person into a level two, you need to flip over the cube to a different side and associate them with a positive word. And that's going to be really the main exercise I'm going to leave you with, because this whole workshop is about positivity, and we have to be able to make these associations. I'd like to go back a little bit into positivity and how it works with Dalnikov's foot. Ritzvi Meir's idea of looking away and kind of feeling sorry that you saw that and you caught that person in a vulnerable state, and davening and thinking good about them, really has a lot of effect on us. And there's a parish on Perkei Avos that was the time of Rabbi Yedaya Pnini, who lived in Provence, I think, at the time of the Rambam. He wrote a parish on Perkei Avos where he talked about the concept of being Dalnikov's foot, and he said something very interesting there. He says when a person, you know, the classic Dhamma Katsu that we're taught in kindergarten is, you know, you watch somebody walk into McDonald's and they walk out chewing, and you're supposed to think, well, they're not eating a hamburger, they're eating their kosher sandwich, and they just needed to use the bathroom. You know, these exercises of the reframing. He says, what are you doing when you do this? You are in an ambiguous situation, meaning you think somebody whose behavior can be either understood in a negative way or a positive way. It could be that they're eating a tray sandwich, or it could be they're eating a kosher sandwich that they just needed to use the bathroom. Now, that means that the situation itself is ambiguous. It's not clear. It could go either way. I'm choosing the good option over the bad. So I'm pushing away the bad option that she was eating trace, and I'm putting towards me the good option. She must be eating her kosher sandwich. He says, when you do this, in Dhamma Katsu, where you're always extracting good over bad in ambiguous situations, you become a person who's good at extracting good over bad. He said, and this is fascinating, that this affects your life in many different ways. He says, when you have to make a decision for yourself, unrelated to an interpersonal situation, you're not sure what to do. He says, you've become seasoned at smelling out good options and choosing them over bad. You become a better decision maker because you've worked on Dhamma Katsu. Fascinating. You've also become a person who, in a world which is a pretty mixed up place, you can feel that you're living in a good world, because we can always look at what's going wrong. But the person who's Dhamma Katsu becomes a more positive person, because when he walks out of his house, he could either say the flowers are really dry, or he could say, wow, a beautiful day in Eretz Yisrael. Up to him. He can say, that child's shirt needs to be ironed, or he could say, what a cute smile. Because you've become better at choosing good and seeing good. And this is very important for our emotional health, because you can feel that you live in a terrible world with terrible things, or you can feel that you live in a beautiful world with a lot of good. And the Seminary of Lilberg says something very interesting. He says, most of us think that being Dhamma Katsu is a mitzvah for the naive. He said, Baruch Hashem, it's some mitzvahs for Kohanim, and some for women, and some for naive people. Naive people, oh, she meant well, she didn't really say it, she didn't really eat it, she didn't really do it, oh, it's all good. Tzimari Zilberg says, actually, being Dhamma Katsu is a very strong, sophisticated cognitive exercise. Why? Because when you have a quick judgment on something, most people have a very hard time reframing something once they've thought it. If you thought that a person is not such a nice person, to be able to then give them a chance to prove themselves as being nice is very difficult. Because we're a little cognitively rigid. Things that are bad, and people that are good. He says, this mita actually takes a lot of sophistication. It's for a highly intelligent person, not for a naive person. The ability to reframe things, the ability to flip it to the other side, to see something differently, this is sophisticated, because you have to overcome your initial evaluation and see it from a different perspective. I'd like to say that this concept of the like neuro-linguistic reprogramming, or flipping over the cube, I once had a very interesting personal example with this. I was living in a certain house where, in order to get to my husband's study, you had to walk through my kitchen. And my husband asked me, can he have a shiur on Thursday night for a certain group of Talmidim? So I said yes. I think I probably would have said yes anyway, but I didn't realize at the time that they would be tracking through my kitchen exactly at the worst part of the Erev Shabbos preparation, with all the peels and all the mess. You know, not when all the pots are bubbling and everything looks nice, and not when things are just still in the grocery bag, but just when it's like really messy, exactly what a restaurant or hotel would not want you to see if you're going to eat there. And I used to be very embarrassed. Every time these Talmidim would track through my kitchen, I'm thinking, oh, this is not a nice way, you know. It's nice when they come for Shabbos and they see, but they have to see this. They have to see the peels and the mess. I said, oh, you know, they're aesthetic people. It probably even nauseates them a little bit. And some of them are recent Bali Tshuva. Maybe it's even a Chol Hashem. It bothered me. But couldn't like throw like a, you know, blanket over my whole kitchen every time they walked in. So I dealt with it. One time, and this was out of my earshot, so I knew that it was not being said for me. One time, as they're approaching the door, there was a new boy joining the shiur. So one boy says to the other, ah, Now you're going to see what a kitchen of Erev Shabbos and Achnasas Orchim looks like. Come. I said, such a shame that I had such Agmas Nefesh for all those weeks. But that's the other side of the cube. That's somebody who wants to be positive. That's somebody who has an Ayin Tova. You could see it as an aesthetic bleh. You could see that as Achnasas Orchim and Kavod Shabbos. Well, it depends how you flip the cube. So, I remember being very touched by this, that this person clearly had an Ayin Tova. This is what we want to do about the people who we have a difficult time with. Every person has tremendous strength. In fact, Rabbi Yerucham Lubavitch says that every person has what he calls a nekuda of shefa. A nekuda where they are so good that they could be your role model and your Rebbe. And you're thinking, but I don't like them because of X. He said, you need to figure out the nekuda of shefa. I say this to students sometimes, who after coming back home, they're much more critical. You know, after a year in Israel of independence, you come back and everybody is chesronos, it's become very, very clear to you. I said, you need to figure out about every family member of yours, in what area they're your role model. Because you have to learn from them. And once you figure out that area, that becomes your positive reframe for them. This person, I can learn a lot about them from honesty or from whatever else it is. But the point is that every person has this. And we need to be able to focus. Okay, how much time do we have? Not too much. Okay, I need to say one other point, especially when talking about community work. The Slonim Rebbe talks about this concept of positivity in the way we view our communities. And he says it's an unbelievable idea. We often talk about the concept of hashpa'at ha-sviva, the way your environment influences you. And, you know, we want to be careful that our children have the right friends and we live in the right environment, etc., etc. The Shlomo Rebbe introduces the concept of the psychological hashpa'at ha-sviva, the subjective hashpa'at ha-sviva. What does he say? He says you can have two people living in the same community. One person is brought down by the community, and the other person is inspired. What's the difference between them? One of them thinks mistakenly that in order to protect himself from negative influences, he has to remind himself at all times what people are doing wrong. And maybe even point it out to his children. You know, we don't dress like that. We don't eat that half shirt. We don't do this. We don't go there. We don't do this. He says, what you're doing, and he talked about children, Dafka. He says, you're creating a sviva that's a garbage pail for your child. Because all he thinks about is that everybody around here is doing a lot of bad stuff. And then, why should I be the only good guy around here? He says, paradoxically, you can have a negative influence on somebody because you want to protect them. So you want to show them, we don't do this, we don't do that, we don't do this. But the child then views his sviva as being a negative one. And he doesn't have to be the only tzaddik in a negative environment. He says, the same people could flip in a positive way. You look for opportunities to say, look how much stuff these people give. Or look how they're trying. Or look what that is. The child feels that he's living in a sviva of tzaddikim, the people who are growing, who are sincere. And then the sviva has a good influence on him. Now you might say, but how am I going to teach my child not to dress like that or not to act like that? So, the Nesiva Shalom said something very interesting. He said, you can educate on an objective level. You could teach a child a standard of tzniut or a standard of behavior or how we talk, how we act. You don't have to demonstrate through people negatively. Meaning, you want to teach a child a method, teach them. This is what halacha requires of. The child is smart enough. When he sees somebody not dressing that way, he's not stupid. You don't have to rub it in by saying, and that's the one who doesn't dress the way we learned, right? We just learned halacha. He said, if you want to use people to demonstrate, use them to demonstrate positive. You see how they give tzedakah? You never point to somebody as your example for negative behavior. Why? Because it gets back to what Rav Tzvi Meyer is saying. The noticing and pointing out the negative is not coming from the high points in me. It's a little bit of my yetzer hara or my annoyance that makes me point out to the child but who's not behaving properly. It might go down in your head, I need to educate positively about this because I'm afraid that the child might be exposed to something not good. And then you talk about the beauty of good behavior and talking politely and not yelling and not whatever. But don't succumb to the temptation to point, and you see, that kid who was yelling in the park, he doesn't have good mythos. The child is smart enough to make his own association. You can educate as much as you want, but don't use people as your examples in negative education. And then Sivah Shalom says, this is about the psychological hashpa of the Siva. If a person thinks he's living in a place where people are sincere and growing, then he wants to be like everybody. If a person thinks he's living in an area where everybody's doing the wrong thing, he wants to be like everybody else. And this is why it's so important to be positive about our environment, because then we're in a growing area, and we all grow. I didn't make this up. This is the Slonim Rebbe. Okay, let's get a little bit to Ayin Tova. Now, the reason why I didn't spend too much time focusing on Ayin Tova is that I heard that Rebbetzin Shoshana Nissenbaum did a whole workshop on Ayin Tova, and I don't want to overlap too much. And yet, you can't talk about this mitzvah of positivity without getting to the positive. So we have to focus on this as well. How do we work on this concept? And here, I would like to talk about a beautiful idea. The pasuk in Mishlei that says, Tov Ayin Hu Yivarach. Person with a good ayin will, a good eye will be blessed. The Gemara in Sota does a play on words with this pasuk. He says, "Al tikre yivarech, ela yivarech." Tov ayin hu yivarech. The Gemara rephrases the pasuk in Mishlei. What does this mean? And the Gemara brings down a halacha that we don't pass in this way. The Gemara says that when you're sitting in a suda, and you have to pick somebody for a zimun, the person who's going to hold the kohos and be mezame, you should pick somebody who has an ayin tova, who has a good perspective, a positive perspective. Now imagine your Shabbos table. Okay, so you're a little negative, you're a little critical. Here, you take the kohos. We don't actually pasuk in this way. And yet the Gemara teaches you an important message. What's the connection between the person holding the kosher bracha and making the bracha and an ayin tova? And here Rav Dessa says something beautiful on this. He says, because the person who has an ayin tova is very similar to that cup of wine. What happens when you fill a cup to the top the way we do it at kosher bracha? It spills over. It overflows. He says that person with an ayin tova has an overflowing positivity towards other people. And this person is like a kosher bracha. He's so effusive. He's so overflowing that he influences the environment around him. Just like the wine spills into the plate. My overflowingness, my positivity is spilling over to make you a happier person. But I think the Rebbe is making a point here that we have to think about. The person himself has to be a kosher bracha, which means that the first place where he has to be positive is about himself and his life circumstances. You can't be an overflowing cup influencing other people if you feel that you only have the cup half full, as the expression goes. The kosher bracha means that I have such hakara for the beauty in my life that it's just spilling over. I just want to be good to you. I just want to share my positivity with you. And the first place we start with positivity is viewing myself as being lucky, being full of bracha, having so many gifts. It's a little hard to be positive towards others when you feel very dried out yourself. So we have to start by focusing on all the good that's going on in my life. And by the way, if we talk about NLP, I need a few positive adjectives to use about myself. Because if I'm always having the cube on one side about myself as being lazy or whatever it is, I'm not going to have an easy time getting to a positive word about you. And that's the first point in Ayin Tova, is that I need to be a kosher bracha. I need to appreciate what I have. I need to feel that I have almost too much. I want it to overflow towards you too. And this is the concept of Ayin Tova. So the positivity starts here, and it emanates outward. Let's look a little further. Shmua Tova Tidashen Atem, Pasuk Mishlei Tezvav. good news makes the bones supple. I once heard this idea that if you look at four quadrants of life experiences, what makes us happy and what doesn't make us happy. So when good things happen to you, you're happy. When bad things happen to you, that's the second quadrant, you're sad. When bad things happen to other people, third quadrant, you're sad. Nobody likes to hear bad news. Now the fourth, when good things happen to other people. Here, if you have an Ayin Tova, you're like that proud bubby who loves to hear, to see the report card of their grandchild. You just gave me so much nachas. People who have an Ayin Tova, their bones become supple from other people's good news. Rav Dessa says somewhere that he's mazbia eino mitovato shel achem, such a beautiful lashon. You feast your eyes on other people's success. This is so important for us. Why? Because think about the person who doesn't have the Ayin Tova. 75% of life experiences make me unhappy. Or at least 50% make me unhappy and one of them is neutral. So only when good things happen to me, I'm happy. A person who has an Ayin Tova, the pasuk is saying, Tadashin Atem, you become a healthier person. Your bones are supple. Why? Because you have another quadrant of life experiences that put you in a good mood. I say it's like the Torah's remedy to osteoporosis, right? Stronger bones. That's what the pasuk is saying. Tadashin Atem, your bone will become stronger. It's very interesting because in Mishlei we also say, Urukav Asmos Kina. Jealousy makes bones rot. So this is literally the opposite. Literally, you can have a whole osteoporosis prevention course. You need to get to a place where you hear somebody's good news and it's geschmack for you. I'm so happy to hear that he got into that yeshiva. That's fantastic. Even harder when your child didn't get into that yeshiva. But sometimes our problem is that that's exactly the problem. Because I'm competitive. This is kinah, which we did in my vod once for a lot of weeks. I don't want to go into it right now. Kinah takes away from Ayin Tova. Because if all I can think about is that my kid didn't get in, then your good news is actually my bad news. It's just reminding me. But a person with an Ayin Tova actually has a lot of emunah. Because he realizes, as the Gemara in Yuma says, Ein adam nogea b'muchan l'chaveru. Nobody takes away what's allotted for you. So that child getting into yeshiva has nothing to do with whether my child will or not, and therefore I might as well be happy for you, because it's good for me and it's good for you. It makes my bones supple, and I communicate to you. We have to start winding down, but I have to quote you from Tzvi Meyer. He says, there's no bigger cause for shefa in the world than an Ayin Tova. He says, when you have an Ayin Tova on people's success, Hashem sends success to the world through you. You become the conduit for good things happening. And you know what Ritzvi Meir says? Hashem drops them off in your lap on the way to give to the other person as well. He quotes the pasuk when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. The house was full of light. He says, you can fill your house with light. When your children see you excited for other people and saying good words about other people, your house is light. You compliment others. You see the good in people. The first circle, the second circle, the third circle. You just have good things to say. He says, this is a light home. A, because the children learn that there's a lot of good things to be happy about, but also because Hashem sends His Shefa through you. You're the perfect conduit for goodness to come into the world. All you want is for good things to happen. And that's what your positivity does. I think that this is something which is like it's a mitzvah which is good for me, and it's good for you. Because I become a healthier person, a more positive person, and you enjoy the fact that I am getting geschmack from your good news. So I want to just end with a piece of homework. But I have to throw in two other practical exercises because different people apply relate to different things. I'm sorry that I went over time, and I'm going to finish up right now. This is coming from the Gra. The Gra, on the pasuk Nefesh Bracha Kedushan, the Gra says, I'm not going to read to you from everything right now, he says, it's a person who gives bracha to other people in a complete way. I'll just, without quoting to the source now because we have to finish. You know, if you've ever had a simcha, and many people came to your simcha, and you go home and you say, the Schwartzes were really happy for us. There's some people who remember them at your simcha because there is something about their positivity that just stayed with you. I call it the warm handshake. It's the mazel tov that stayed with you because this person really was excited for you. It's said about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, they used to come to Smachos, stay for a very short time and influence the entire atmosphere. Once one of his children was asked, and they said, when my father leaves his house, he starts thinking about the Balei Simcha and how they must feel. And he starts thinking about all the stages that this person went to until they got to the Simcha. By the time he walks into the Simcha, he's elated, as if he's a family member. And that's why his presence, even though it's only there for a few minutes, just kind of lit up the whole place. We could try this. Okay, I won't give my last points because it's I don't want to stay so much over time. People have to go. But the homework is to flip the cube to the other side. You take your circle one person or your circle three person, and you're looking at one specific adjective when you think about them. Lazy, aggressive, shrilly voice, whatever it is. You need to flip. You could look for the nekuda of shefa. Like, what are they really good at? Or you could just even see another positive aspect of them. They're very efficient. And then you practice. Sarah is efficient. Sarah is efficient. Sarah, the efficient one. She's efficient. When you see her, you think efficient. Over time, you will reprogram the way you feel. Instead of feeling aggressive, you will feel efficient. And this is the movement from the negative to the positive. Okay, I'm sure there's a lot more to be said, and the book has plenty and plenty of asots, but I learned once that tafas ruba lo tafas, it's good to leave people with one thing to think about, and not 15. So that's, we can continue the sablana, picking the circle one person, and trying to associate them with a specific positive word. Thank you very much, everybody. Friemeyer Sefer is called Dion Lekaf Zchut, but you have to ask, you have his name on it, you have to ask for it, okay? It's called Sefer.